This is the top dog, Jonah, and I'm here to tell you, if you listen to podcasts, you need to listen to the new podcast by Brian Hebner, Reffin' It Up. Make sure you're listening.
This is Impact World Champion Moose, and make sure you listen to Reffin' It Up with Brian Hebner.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Tom Hannafin. He's the Drama King, Matthew Ray Wallman. I got a question for you. Do you like podcasts?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I got a new one that you got to check out. It's called the Reffin' It Up Podcast, hosted by our buddy Brian Hebner.
That's right. Takes you through all kinds of stories yesterday and today. Stars of all pro wrestling. It's a great, great listen.
You got to check it out wherever you get your podcasts. The Reffin' It Up Podcast. Don't miss it.
Howdy, folks. Double J here. That's right. That's J-E-F-F-J-A-R-R-E-T-T. That's Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Tune in here to Reffin' It Up with my pals, RJ and Brian Hebner. It's really a great podcast. Tune in every Wednesday morning when it drops. Check them out on social media. Subscribe to the podcast. And man, this episode is a good one. I listen to it every week. Stay tuned, guys. Reffin' It Up with RJ and Brian.
From WWE to TNA, by way of the NWA, it is time for Reffin' It Up with current Impact referee, Brian Hebner. A great episode is right around the corner, so we hope you are ready for the 1, 2, 3.
Welcome to episode 4 of Reffin' Up with Brian Hebner. I am the man with the magical voice. He is the man with the stripes. He is the man that counts the 1, 2, 3. He is and forever will be Mr. Brian Hebner. Brian, what's up, man?
Hey, man. How you doing tonight? Can't believe episode 4 goes by quick. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, man, a lot of good things that we've heard from the last 3 episodes. Really looking forward to this one. I know this hits home to you and to me as well. A good friend of both of ours, Mr. Jeff Jarrett, is the center point of this week's episode. But a little peek behind the curtain to last week. This Kurt Angle episode, man, a lot of buzz so far, man. A lot of people are listening.
That's awesome, man. It's really good to hear, and I'm just glad people are enjoying. But like you and I both always say, you know, it's okay to give us some constructive criticism if you want to do that. And feedback's always good because it only helps us get better and gives us a gauge of where people want us to be or what they want us to do. So that's awesome, and I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, you can hit us up on the Twitter gimmick at Reffin' It Up or at Baby Hebner, either one. That'll be both of our handles. So hit us up. Let us know what you think, because we're definitely looking to make this as good as possible, as popular as possible, and as enjoyable as possible as well, Brian. So, but without further ado, Jeff Jarrett, man, a third generation wrestler from a promoter, from his father, from his grandmother. When was the first time that you met Jeff, that you worked with Jeff? Was it in the TNA days, or was it before that when you met him through probably your dad when he was in WWF?
Yeah, no, I did. I met him through my dad. Jeff was a character when I first met him, man. Just full of life and had that long blonde hair and just one of those vibrant kind of guys. Him and my dad were riding together when I first met him. That's how I met him, was, you know, in a car riding together. And, you know, as a kid, it was like, well, wow, this is Double J, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I just remember a fan being on the outside when we were getting the car for our first initial ride. And I just remember a fan going, hey, Jeff, I love you, buddy. He was like, I love you. He says, look, my hair's just like yours. And Jeff's getting in the car and he goes, yeah, yeah, you know what? I love you too. The only difference between my hair and your hair is mine's clean and yours is dirty as shit. I just didn't know how to handle myself. I was just like, oh boy, here we go. So this was the initial time I ever met him that I remember, you know, as a kid, but that was the initial time I really remember like being personable with one-on-one, like in the car, kind of thing, being really close. So that was a great initiation to Jeff Jarrett.
Sure. Well, yeah, that would definitely be unique. So would that have been in the early 90s or the mid 90s when it was first or second round? Because he went over to WCW for a little bit there.
Yeah, it would have been mid 90s.
Okay, so it would have been that second round. Okay. Yeah, because he started there in 92 after he wrestled for his dad's Continental Wrestling there and in the 80s and the early 90s. And then kind of picked up that country music star gimmick.
Right.
In the WWF. What did you think of that? Obviously being, like I said, going through with your dad with him, but how did you look at that? Do you remember anything out of that?
You talking about the Double J?
The country star gimmick, or country music star gimmick.
I absolutely loved it, man. I did. I thought it was like it had some stupid to it, but it also had like some crazy good to it. Like it was just one of those cross things where I think that probably you would find that a lot of people either couldn't stand or just kind of really liked. And me as a fan sitting at home, not in the business at the time, was just like, wow, this is pretty damn cool. So yeah, I personally digged it. I thought it was good. I thought it actually fit Jeff. I don't know how Jeff feels about it. I mean, I'm pretty sure he doesn't, you know, hate on it for sure, because it probably made him a lot of money. But, you know, I thought it was good. It gave him a different persona, and people that didn't know Jeff, this was the way they did it. So he came in as a heel at that point, I guess, with that gimmick. So surely that got some heat. So I just thought that was, in my opinion, I thought it was pretty brilliant and fit him so well.
Did you have any run-ins with his dad, Jerry, or was it just pretty much with Jeff?
No, I met him, but I don't remember enough to really talk about him, you know what I mean, right. on a basis like that. But no, I didn't have anything major to really contribute to his dad.
Sure, sure. Yeah, not a problem. Did you see any of his earlier stuff in Smoky Mountain or with Continental? Any of his early, like before he got to the WWF early, or do you not kind of recollect that?
No, I did actually. I was a kid that if I liked you and like kind of digged what you were doing, like I would just do some research, you know what I mean? Like we didn't have the easy access of research we have nowadays, but no, I would go back and look and go through magazines. I used to collect the Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines and stuff like that. And I would, you know, the rankings and all that stuff. And I would go back and I would do, you know, read articles and things of that nature and go back and watch videos. I used to remember watching, you know, things on TV and cable and all that. I would just search through and find anything wrestling, you know what I mean? And just go through. So, no, I saw some of his stuff. I did. And I've also done that as I've gotten older and gotten to the business. I've done that. So, no, I mean, I've watched a lot of his old stuff, which I really love. I mean, it's just good stuff.
Now, when, like I mentioned, third generation wrestler and promoter, did you kind of relate to him a little bit more just because between your dad and your uncle being in the business, did you kind of relate to him a little bit more? Did you have kind of like a strike up a friendship that way? Or was it kind of one of the things as you worked with him more, that's how you guys became friendly?
Well, I mean, I think Jeff always respected my abilities in the ring. I really do. And I think that he also respected me because I was Earl's son. Mm-hmm. And then I also think that I earned his respect. And, you know, he's one of those only guys that I've worked with as a worker, that I worked with as a friend, and then I worked under as him being my boss. He's one of the few guys that I could actually, I don't even know if there's anyone else I could say that for. You know, obviously I've done a Vince McMahon match with him in it, but I mean, it wasn't like doing a Jeff Jarrett match. This was just a do it, bang it, and that's it kind of thing. Where Jeff, you know, I've worked with him as being my boss, my friend, and a coworker. So kind of different, kind of weird.
Yeah. So you probably did a lot more of work with him when in TNA then, right?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah. So like 2002 rolls around, before that, let's precursor to that. 2001, WWF ends up buying WCW. We won't get into that. We know all the history and the backstory to that. 2002 comes around, Jeff and his dad together founded the NWA TNA. better known now as obviously Impact. So were you surprised? Obviously you were not with, Impact and TNA at that time, but looking at it from the outside, were you surprised that they started this, this promotion?
Dude, I actually thought it was really, really cool. Yeah. So, you know, that was one of my off days when they did those Wednesday pay-per-views. So I was at, you know, with WWE at the time, and I had the Dish Network, and I had this gimmick card that you could just put in and you could get all the pay-per-views and shit all free. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do whatever you wanted to do. It was the most amazing thing that I've ever had in my life. It was just awesome. And I would literally go home and come off the road and watch more wrestling after I was burnt out. But anyway, I would just come home and I would watch their shows on Wednesday nights, and just absolutely loved what they were doing. Never even thinking I would ever work there. You know what I mean? Never. Just enjoying wrestling, being a fan, getting outside of my world, which is what we were doing. And I just think that at that time I was like, they got something going on here. And there were guys that I've never heard of that were on there. And they're, you know, just, I loved, and just, it was just really, really good and really cool. And it was something I really did pay attention to. So that was pretty odd for me. And it was also, you know, like I said, it was always on my off day. I was always off on Wednesdays unless I was overseas or something like that. Otherwise it fell right to my schedule where I could watch literally every week. Didn't cost me a dollar. It was just like watching it, just like, you know, like I watch TV now. So I would just slip my little card in there and watch some TNA Impact. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause at that time then they started hot there and they really adapted with the, 10 pounds of gold there, the TNA, the NWA title. Were you happy to see that? Cause obviously you have a history with that, obviously with your dad being the NWA before he went over to the WWF. Were you happy to see that kind of that lineage of that title move on to another company?
Well, I mean, I think the company had so much prestige and was really just such a big, big thing, you know, throughout many of the years of pro wrestling, when pro wrestling was at its peak, you know what I mean? As far as, you know, obviously we didn't have the cable and the outreaches that we did then, but I mean, NWA was a big freaking deal back in the day. And that NWA world title meant a whole lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so it moving on and not just being sitting on a shelf somewhere and being talked about and going into, you know, with the TNA back when they opened that up, I thought it was tremendous. I mean, who wouldn't want to win the TNA NWA World Championship? I mean, it was, so yeah, I was very excited that it got brought back and had some, I don't know the word I want to use, but it had some relevance, I guess would be the word.
Sure. So in regards of Jeff, between whether he's wearing the promoter hat, whether he's wearing the worker hat, or anywhere in between there, how would you rank him as one of the best wrestling minds of all time?
I would just tell you this, and I'll say this as a matter of fact. Jeff is a very, very, very intelligent man when it comes to this sport, this entertainment business. He is a very, very sharp, intelligent mind. And I began to realize that when he came back after a hiatus, when I was there at TNA, and just seeing the things that he was able to do and start to see him in the creative room, really, I knew it already, but like firsthand experience in a creative meeting with him was really, really eye-opening. It was just like, man, shit. Like, this guy really, really knows how he wants to shoot stuff. He knows how he wants to lay it out. He knows the story afterwards. He knows the facial expression he wants. Like, just covered everything. And then you look at what the guy's done. I mean, you know, so he's up there. He's got to be. I mean, who else has done what he's done as far as opening a promotion and just going with it? You know what I mean? Like, you know, sometimes there's a point where I wish things could have went differently for him. And I don't know if that's the way he feels or whatever, but he was a great leader and, you know, was doing really good things. And I just would say a great man in this business. If he's a person you're able to talk to and you need to figure out what's going on with yourself and he's able to talk to you, you better listen because he does know what's going on.
Yeah. It's once a promoter, always a promoter, once a worker, always a worker. Do you even see down the line, you know, you listen to his podcast, My World with Conrad, on whatever platform that you listen to this podcast, you can listen to his as well. But they always joke around about, oh, they're going to start another promotion. They're going to start another promotion.
I don't know.
I don't think it's that out of the realm of possibility with him.
I don't either. I really don't either. It's so funny. A lot of people asked me before this Tony Khan thing happened when he bought the Ring of Honor. A lot of people were buzzing me, man. I'm serious. Like, because they know I'm friends with Jeff, but I mean, Jeff's not going to come to my world and say, oh, no pun intended. It's not going to text me one day and be like, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, Ring of Honor. I mean, but people were asking me, they were like, do you know anything? Yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know, I'm not putting that out to pasture. No, I'm not. Could this be something that will happen? I would not put it past Jeff Jarrett. I wouldn't. I would not put it past him at all. I'll be honest with you. The guy knows what he's doing, knows how to do run a promotion, and he's only gotten more experience. By here's the thing. You only learn things by falling on your face. It's up to the person that can get back up, wipe themselves off, move on, and learn from the mistakes and not make them again. Jeff's gotten that and done that. So will he ever do it? I don't know that. But I'm saying, if somebody said, oh, well, guess what I heard? Jeff's opened a new promotion that's called My World. Yada, yada, yada. I would believe it. I'd be like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it just seeing all the stuff that he's done over, you can even say over the last 3-4 months between NWA being the referee with Nick Aldis and Matt Cardona, his stuff with GCW, you know, his stuff with the live shows with that he did with the My World thing with the Super Show with him and Eric. He's out there as much as he's pretty much since he's ever been, pretty much since he was working.
Well, let's not forget, he was also a Four Horseman, according to him.
Now, where do you stand on that? Do you think he is a Four Horseman?
Yeah, he was a Four Horseman. It just wasn't. He was. He's right. I hate to admit it. But, yeah, he was a Four Horseman. I mean, come on. It just wasn't one of those ones that was just the longevity. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he wasn't a long Four Horseman, but he was literally technically in the Four Horsemen.
Because I've actually literally gone after when they started that whole work shoot, whatever the hell you want to call it on the show, I would literally go to Wikipedia every single day and actually change it and put his name in the list there of the Four Horsemen on Wikipedia, just so I can say, hey, he's a Four Horseman. Wikipedia says it, so it's got to be true.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So what's your take on it? Your personal take.
I grew up watching them there in WCW too. That was fairly, honestly, that was the first time I saw him and Razor for the IC title, that feud that he had, which we'll get to that in a bit. But I saw his stuff work with there with him and Mongo and just a lot of stuff he did there in WCW. But they wouldn't have put him, associate him with the Four Horsemen if he wasn't a official horseman. So I think my opinion is he's a Four Horseman.
I mean, so I'll say this. So if they said, let's induct the Four Horsemen into the Hall of Fame and all of its members, I don't think he'd be in it.
No, they actually, WWE, they are in the Hall of Fame and he was not part of it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know why he's not. I mean, he wasn't a big integral part of the Four Horsemen. It was like
correct.
A quick storyline per se.
Sure. Yeah.
But I mean, they all acknowledged it though. So how do you say no? Like it wasn't.
So it's like I'll make an analogy and see if you agree with it. It may be a terrible analogy, but I'll give you an analogy. So, you know, Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal. You had, yeah. Then you had Crush.
Yeah.
So Crush would he technically be LOD then, Legion of Doom then? Because he wasn't an official member. He wore the face paint. He wrestled with them, but so did Jeff Jarrett with the rest of the Four Horsemen.
Well, no.
Or is that, am I just terrible analogy?
Well, no. Well, I'm trying to sit back here and think. So Crush was part of the LOD?
Legion of, or not Legion of Doom. Excuse me. Demolition. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Demolition. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got the wrong team of face paint.
They all look alike. No, I'm kidding.
They all look alike at the end, yeah. So in that aspect then, Crush is part of Demolition.
Yes.
Axe and Smash. Would he then be an official Demolition member? Like Jeff would be an official Four Horsemen then?
I would say the other way more so than the one you're saying, but we're both talking about for Jeff.
Right.
Because he had some, he had more longevity in that group.
Yeah. Right. I still think he is, regardless. You can probably, anybody can twist it any way they want to, but, it's good for a show.
Well, I'm just going to piss Jeff off now. So I'm going to go the other way now. Now that I've thought about things, I don't think he was a member of the Four Horsemen.
Okay. There you go. I'll still stick with my gun and say that you're a Four Horsemen. So, I brought up Razor there with his run there with him for the IC title there. Do you think that encompassing his whole career, WWE, WCW, TNA, do you think Razor was his like legitimate best rivalry?
I think that in WWE, it was his most cared about rivalry.
Yeah.
Meaning that people cared the most about. Right. You know, obviously, everybody's going to bring up China. But that, to me, that was a short program. But, you know, it had some length. But I'm saying, but like that Razor Jeff Jarrett program was something that went on. And I think people were really invested in. I'd have to say his. That's got to be. I mean, really, it's got to be.
No. I agree with you. And you can even like we're going to be going over in a little bit here his match with Kurt Angle at Lockdown 2011 in TNA, and you can even think about his run there with Kurt against Kurt there in TNA. That could have been one of his better rivalries too. You know, because they had so many matches together there in 2011.
Yeah, I mean, well, we were talking about WWE too, so I mean, that's right. Think about that, but yeah, no. I'm just saying, like, I just think that the nostalgia that Razor Ramon brought, and in my opinion, people can say whatever they want to say. Like, Jeff Jarrett was over as a heel, like just over. And I mean, you had guys like me that were young that just freaking loved him, thought he was awesome, loved the gimmick. You know what I mean? So if you have people investing to hate you and people that love you, I mean, you're doing something right. And I think that Razor helped elevate him as a person too, you know, and he also did the same for Razor. So it just became an elevation program for both people. And it was awesome. It worked. And I think, yes, I would definitely think that would probably be his best rivalry in WWE. Yeah.
You know, lastly, before we get to our second count, I just want to get your opinion on, you know, he gets a lot of criticism for everything that happened, went down with TNA there towards the end of his run there. Do you think a lot of that criticism's just, or do you think it's just kind of just, you know, fans being fans, people being people, and just trying to blame somebody?
You know, I'll be honest. I mean, you know, I was privy to stuff there because of, you know, where I was at that point in time, but I don't know exactly what truly happened, didn't happen, or whatever that may be. You know, but ultimately, in my opinion, I think we all, no matter what, have to go back to the mismanagement run by Dixie Carter. Mm-hmm. You know, and people want to put blame other places, and people want to put blame wherever it may be. I think Dixie and her true heart that she has did the best that she could do without much of a wrestling background, without much of a wrestling mind. You know, I just think that it all crumbled down on her because she was, you know, a mark, you know, and that's what, I mean, that's basically what it is. She was a mark and just didn't get it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I'm not the guy to ask, unless you just want an opinion, which opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one.
Right.
Is Jeff the downfall of TNA? No, I don't think that. I don't. Absolutely not. No.
So at the end of the day, between WCW, WWF, and TNA, he's held major titles in each of those promotions. Heavyweight titles, not mid-card, but IC title, obviously. At the end of the day, do you think that he's going to be best known for his work with his that run there in TNA, being part of the main roster, part of the management? Or do you think he's basically going to get known as the guy from WWF?
No, I definitely think that his stuff that he's done in TNA is actually going to be what I would think, what most people remember, or most people would, you know, put together and say. I mean, you know what? It's such a tricky question, because you're talking about apples and oranges, because WWE was at such a higher platform. Mm-hmm. So, of course, more people are watching. So if you ask every wrestling fan, in my opinion, that said, what do you remember Jeff Jarrett as? What do you remember Jeff Jarrett? What do you remember Jeff Jarrett? Well, your population is going to be higher for WWE, so they're going to say more towards the WWE-ish answer. You know what I mean? But me personally, and maybe people that are just fans of Jeff would say what he did in TNA. Mm-hmm. Established a company, ran a company, had some of his greatest matches that I can remember. I'm not saying the greatest of all time, but some of his greatest matches he had. And how is that not part of his legacy? How is that not part? I mean, if I was him, I'd be very, very proud of what he did in TNA.
Oh, exactly. You know, and I was a big fan of that too, with TNA there in their early incarnations, even towards the match we're about to see, about to go over here in 2011, 2010. That was really when it was hot, man, when they were really going strong. Yeah.
Yep.
So with that being said, let's go over to our second count officially. We're going to be talking about his match with Kurt Angle from Lockdown 2011, the Ultra Male Rules 2 out of 3 falls steel cage match. So what I'm going to do, Brian, too, is I'm also going to put in, I have a YouTube video of this match. I'm going to put this in the show notes here. So everybody that's listened to here, go over to the show notes, check it out. Copy paste it. It's right in YouTube, or you can simply search Kurt Angle, Jeff Jarrett, Lockdown 2011 into YouTube and watch it as well. One of the better matches I've ever seen of these two guys. And I think it's because there's so much backstory and lead up to this match between, you know, it's a story that everybody knows. You know, Jeff being married to Kara now, and they're playing a storyline on real life.
Yes. Aside from backstory, they gave these two wrestling vets time. And these two guys gave us a WrestleMania moment, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So in other words, these guys were able to have time to sell, to work, to do whatever the hell they wanted to do, to tell a story and to make everyone, including me, who was in the ring, believe this backstory. And that's what they made this match. I went back, like you said, and watched it, and I could not believe, just truly could not believe how amazing this match truly was. I had forgotten how great it was. And I went back and I watched, and just the finish, the ultimate finish was just so freaking incredible. I loved it. And if you didn't watch it or you watched it, go back and do it again, because mm-hmm. it would not let you down. It was the most, I would say, going back and watching, it might be the most incredible match I was ever part of, as far as the whole picture, mm-hmm. everything, mm-hmm. with the storyline, with the story plot, with backstory, with the actual match itself. It was just so freaking amazing. And those boys ought to be proud.
Yeah. So a little context to it. Best out of three falls. First fall is submissions only. Second fall is pinfalls only. And then fall three is escape from the cage. Where do you fall on, pun intended, a cage match where you can actually win by escaping the cage? Are you the old school mentality like me saying, hey, there's a cage for a freaking reason. Why are you going to be able to escape it? You're going to want to have to keep people in it. Where do you fall on that?
Well, I got the concept.
Yeah.
Because the concept was, that's what Jeff wanted to do, was escape the cage. He wanted to get out of there.
Sure.
He wanted no parts of it. So that was a stipulation thrown in for Jeff. You know what I mean? Where Kurt would like to beat his ass the entire time and not even worry about escaping. Do you see what I'm saying? So,
sure.
So it kind of worked for that. But overall, I am totally with you. I even brought this up in a meeting and another podcast the other day where I actually changed the whole creative idea behind lockdown. And it went over really big with what you're saying. Escaping a cage is not the reason to have a cage. If you're going to escape a ring, well, I want you to say, why don't you just throw me over the top fucking rope?
Right.
Just the same thing.
Sure.
If you want to get rid of me, then just throw me out. If I want to get rid of you and don't want to touch you, then go over the cage. So what's the point? The point is to keep both men inside and let's have a finish. No one leaves. No one interferes. That's our finish. This match was totally different. So we had three stipulations. Okay. So the three stipulations, with that one being one of them, made a lot of sense in this case because it was the heel chicken shit piece of shit is what everybody was supposed to believe. And that's the story we wanted everybody to buy into, wants to leave the cage. And as you watch that finish, you can see that's the way that finish went. Mm-hmm. So it worked for this, but overall, I'm not a fan of getting out of the cage.
So were you a fan of the three falls in a cage, or did you just want a straight up cage match, or did you care?
I honestly, it worked. It just worked because it just gave everybody more of a reason to say, well, he'll beat him on this and he'll beat him on that and he'll beat him on that. So it gave me three different reasons to think why Jeff could go over or why Kurt could go over. So I didn't have a problem with it. Honestly, if you have a really heated battle, it's not the way me personally, I would book it. But I'm sure both of them had say so. And I'm sure if both of them didn't like it, it wouldn't have happened. That's for sure. 100%.
Yeah. So one guy that actually did like it, believe it or not, Dave Meltzer gave this match 4 stars in the Observer. So it goes to show you, man, you get two of the better workers of all time, two of the best wrestling minds. You know, we talked about Kurt last week, and go back in the archives and check that out if you want to get a little bit more in depth on that. But, two of the better workers of all time, man. And it was such a great match. And earlier on too, you get that, you know, that extra character on the outside being Karen. And man, if you guys do not know how great of a character Karen was, Karen Jarrett at this time, go back and watch this. Like I said, the links in the show notes, check it out. Man, what a great character she was.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing from the beginning, from entrances, which gave me the goosebumps, the video package. I'm telling you right now, this was a match that was just built so well. This is when booking in 101 is the way to go. And how could it not be with Jeff Jarrett in it, you know, with his own match, you know, I mean, Kurt Angle, who has a vision as well. I mean, how could it not be simply put together and pieced together and just a masterpiece? And this is what ultimately this was. I mean, it was a masterpiece. It was, and I really forgot until I went back to started doing this podcast and went back and watched it. Cause I ain't gonna lie to you. I mean, we move fast. I would love to hear Jeff talk about this on his own podcast, My World. It would be awesome to hear what he has to say. I mean, our day was, a pretty big day on that day as well. We worked hard that day. A lot of planning, a lot of getting together and figuring things out. They also gave me a lot of input, which is so great. I mean, Jeff's always been good at that, and so has Kurt. So, I mean, that was what's awesome. I mean, I could literally just say what I wanted to say. If both of them didn't like it, it wasn't like it was like, you know what, dude, go get you some catering. You know, it was, hey, we appreciate that idea, but we were kind of doing this because of da da da. Oh, okay, I get it. So I was able to give my opinions and throw in some things that would help. And you know what? There was a lot of things that they took. There were things that they didn't take. There were things that they threw at me that I didn't want to like, or I didn't see, you know, that kind of stuff. It was just really great. You were talking about three guys working together. This had everything to be what it was. And my opinion, not because I was in it, I'm just being honest. Take me out of it. I'm talking about them two and the match itself. Wow. It was just really, really something to behold. Please go back and watch it. Please.
So you said you talked to Kurt and Jeff prior to going out and to this match. Was this, obviously the build was like none other. So they had to be talking about what they were planning on doing before this day, obviously, right?
Yes, very much so.
So were they just kind of fine-tuning everything the day of kind of thing once they got to the venue?
Yeah, so unlike a lot of people, this thing was pretty much me and Kurt were really, really close at match stuff. I believe he even texted me and told me match notes and things like that just to get my head going to where I could think about where they wanted to be and where they wanted to go, which was awesome because it does help a lot. I think that, the main thing they wanted to do was what we call the meat and the potatoes. You know, they wanted to get the start. They wanted to get the middle. They wanted to get the finish. And I think all that was there. And it was about putting everything together, and that's basically the way that worked. And that's not normal. And a lot of times it's just not. It's, people wait last minute. You put all your stuff together and sometimes it could be great. Sometimes it just sucks because it could have been so much better, but you didn't spend the time to think about that stuff. And they were just true professionals, and true professionals mean they want their stuff to be right. And that's what these guys did. And I just truly believe that's why this thing was as amazing as it was.
So leading up to it, did you know how good this actually was going to be? What was your anticipation going into this? Did you basically figure, hey, they're going to be the absolute dog shit out of each other kind of thing? Or are you saying, okay, this could be legitimately one of the best matches of the year?
Knowing what I knew, I knew it could be both ways. I knew it could be, all right, we're going to both bring it. And then we're going to both have a great, great, great wrestling match. So I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure how it would totally come off overall, but I knew that Jeff, he wasn't going to have anything less than the best. And I knew that Kurt wasn't either. Mm-hmm. So when you have those two people thinking the same thing, it's gotta be good. Mm-hmm. I mean, just gotta be.
So, like I said, we talked about Kurt last week. You're pretty much one of Kurt's guys when he was in the WWE with you. Did you end up turning into be one of Jeff's go-to guys as far as being a referee for his matches too? Or was it kind of like, hey, it's kind of pick and choose kind of thing?
Jeff, yes, we did. I think I became his guy. It wasn't a thing that he went around and told people, I don't think. I think it was just kind of appointed. And me and Jeff used to run a spot around the country, all over the country. I have a torn ACL, and it was because of our spot. It wasn't because of Jeff. It was because of me. It was, just to give a little background, so just bear with me here. It's much better to see than talk about. But so we would have a match, and it would be every night, every house show that we go around the country. And Jeff would get in the ring, do his entrance, and I would always stand in his exact corner that he wanted to get up on. No matter where I was, that was the corner he wanted to go to. And he would just shove me across the ring, and I would almost take a bump, and I would just get in the corner and just act like whatever. The fans would immediately be like, "Oh, you piece of shit. Why are you shoving Brian Hebner? What the fuck?" And he'd make his way around. I would pay no attention. I'm looking at the fans, da da da, and I'd be in the opposite corner. Well, he wants to go to that corner. So he'd tell me, he would just look at me, and he'd give me the famous Jeff Jarrett, "Get out of my way. Get out of my way." So I would move out of his way. So immediately starting the match, me and him had this friction and heat, which I'm no selling. I'm just acting like he's just such a jerk. And he's just like, you know, you're a clown. Get out of here. Yada, yada, yada. So I'll use, it doesn't matter. We did it with many people, but I'll use Scott Steiner as an example. So Scotty would come out, get a big pop, do his whole thing. We'd open a matchup. We'd just start, and it would start right away with this spot with us. One little thing here, one little thing there. Boom, they lock up. They get to the corner. Jeff doesn't want a break. I start to do a count. He goes to throw a punch. I'd stop his punch, and I'd push him back. All of a sudden, he takes a head over tea kettle bump, gets back up, and shoves me. All right, so I'm sitting there, and I'm selling it. I'm like, why would you shove me? Why would you shove me? Then he smacks me across my face. I sell it. I go down. I actually don't go down. I just sell it. I get back up, and I'm just like being a baby. Oh, my God. I can't believe you did this to me. Why are you doing this to me? I'm sorry. All of a sudden, another whack across the face. Gives me another one. Now I'm starting to sell to one knee. So I'm at the rope now. I'm bleeding. And now the crowd is all behind us. I mean, just all behind us now. They're like such... fuck you, Jeff, kind of thing. Scott selling it. What are you doing to this guy? I get back up. It's one more time. He gets up. He looks at me and gives me one more blast. Smack across my face. I sell it. I land on my knee, holding my face, selling. He turns his back to me, starts selling to the crowd, getting all kinds of heat. While he's getting all this heat, I take my referee shirt off, pull it off, throw it to the ground. And of course, you can immediately imagine the pop from the crowd because they saw me getting mad. And all of a sudden, here comes that ref shirt. I walk over to him. I tap him on his shoulder. He turns around and I say, "Come on, motherfucker. Let's go." So now everybody starts popping. I'm talking about, I've heard some of the loudest pops I've ever heard from this. So I would do, now I didn't want to look cool. Okay. Now, at that time, I had a body that actually looked pretty decent, so I didn't mind doing the spot. If you ask me to do it right now, no, not doing it. But so I would do the old famous where you hit your foot on the ring and clap at the same time to get the crowd going, mm-hmm. and they would just start going. I mean, it was go. And we would immediately lock up. He'd shoot me to the corner. He'd go to hit me. I would duck. I'd boot him. I'd shoot him across, I'd leapfrog him, I'd drop down and give him this big hip toss. Boom. Give that hip toss. He'd come at me. I'd do the, I'm sorry. I missed the spot. This was one of the bigger spots. After I hip tossed him, I would do this Brian Hebner dance that ended up with doing a spin 360 into a split. He'd get up, he'd come at me. I'd duck Scotty Steiner, who has my shirt because I threw it to him. He has my shirt. He gives him his finish, boom, one, two, three, and we're out. It was the most amazing thing, the funnest thing I've ever done in my life. And it was awesome. And it would just be where Jeff would just come by me each and every night on the house show. He'd go, "You ready to do it, boy?" I'd say, "Yes, sir." He'd go, "Let's go kill it." And that would be it. And that was our deal. And we did it. And it worked. It worked. Yeah. It worked so good. And we were placed in the show where it worked so good. It was probably a 10-minute match total. It saved bumps for the boys. It saved the guy who was working with, who didn't mind the whole of this crap happening. It was just good, man. It was good stuff. I really enjoyed doing that with Jeff. What a spot. If you can find it on YouTube or whatever it is, I used to have it myself. I should have published it when I had it on my thumb drive or whatever it is.
Yeah.
once again, I'm very computer savvy here. but anyway, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. So we'll get back to the match here, but you're going to, before the match even starts, you're saying you're going to DQ Jarrett right now if Karen doesn't go back or leave ringside.
Right.
So this is one of the things I looked at, it's the little things I caught in this, Brian, that I'm like, okay, I have to ask you about this, because maybe it was just kind of a slip up, but if it's a DQ, he's in a cage. Shouldn't there be no DQs in a cage match?
Well, there should be. So that first fall was what?
Submission.
Second fall was pinfall, right?
Pinfall. And then third was the escape.
Okay. So if you lose by, so was it right at the top?
Yeah, it was right at the top. It was right when Karen and Jeff came down, and Jeff got into the ring with Kurt, or before Kurt came out, excuse me. And Karen was actually outside.
Okay. So the DQ would have been his second fall, would have been a DQ, which means he loses.
Okay. Like I said, that's just something that I saw. I'm like, okay, if he's not even, I don't even think the bell rang yet though. That was the thing.
Well, maybe hindsight 2020 is we should have put the pinfall first.
Sure.
Which
okay.
Immediately go down 0-1 had she not left.
Sure. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, hey, good point, man. I'm like that too. I really am. And so was the guys I was working with. It just might have been something that we may have overlooked, but still, it could have still taken a pinfall or I'm sorry, a number, meaning the number of one or three or two away from him. Mm-hmm. Meaning that second fall he would have gave up. So if Kurt went over on the first fall and she didn't leave, then the second fall would have been a DQ. He'd have went up 2-0. That's it.
Sure. No, I get that. Like I said, it's the other thing that I saw too. And maybe it's just because I'm not, you know, I haven't worked in the business. I probably never will. I don't know. Never say never, I guess, but.
Come on, McAfee.
Yeah, there you go. kind of high on that one, but you're counting the shoulders in the first fall here when it was submissions only. Was that, why were you counting the shoulders if it was a submission only? Was it just
because I was fucking nervous and forgot.
Okay. There you go. Okay. That's what I thought.
Cause you didn't see me do it after that.
Correct. Correct. Okay.
I was nervous and forgot.
Yeah. And that's what I thought. I'm like, okay, I just gotta, cause you know, everybody forgets, everybody fucks up. I get it. But I'm like, maybe it's that, or maybe there was some like storyline behind it, why you did it. And I'm like, I got to ask him, cause it's going to bug the shit out of me if I don't ask him.
I saw that too. I was just hoping you did your homework and see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you watch it about two or three times, it's like, oh shit, he's counting the, oh, okay. I got to write that down. So I remember that.
No, it's all good, man. I mean, I would never be the first person to tell you that I've never fucked up. Yeah. All I'm saying is, I've been in an ODQ and started counting them in the corner. And as soon as I do that, once they get out of there, I'm like, why am I counting?
Yeah.
It's just habit. You know what I mean? And and when you add stipulations, that changes your job. You know what I mean? So, I'm not making excuses. At least I remembered after I did it, because I don't even think they got on me. But then again, you have to ask yourself as a worker, why are you covering?
Sure. Right.
You know what I mean? So that might've thrown me off as well, but I'm not making excuses for I'm not. I'm just saying, I forgot. I should have just said no, and that would have been a great story to tell if I could remember and said, no, this is by tap out only, yada, yada, yada,
right.
Which is, you know, where when I watch things back, it pisses me off that I've done things, you know?
Now, was Jeff in the office at this time, or was he just strictly a talent?
I don't remember. I thought I was asking myself that, too. I think he was still in the office, but not as the higher-up. Like, in other words, I don't as big in the office as he used to be.
So the only reason why I ask that is because who's in your ear producer wise, if Jeff's in the ring, if he was that producer at that time,
man, that's a good question. Who was my producer?
And who that would have been? Cause I don't know. Cause Tanae was on commentary. Cause that wouldn't have been, Tanae wouldn't have been.
Man, that's a great question. Who was my producer?
I'm trying to think 2011.
Okay. So,
Was Sanjay a producer at this time?
No. I'm going to say, I'm guessing. Man, do you want me to guess or not?
You can guess if you want. Because I'm curious myself, because I'm just trying to think like time-wise on who it possibly could be, because I know it wouldn't have been, obviously it wasn't Eric, right?
No, I really think it was Abyss.
That's what I was going to go through, because I'm like, it has to be Abyss, because that's would be the only, was Mitchell ever a producer?
No, I really think it was Abyss.
Yeah.
I really do. I just can't remember. That's crazy. I'm going to go with that. Yeah. Maybe I can't say, no, it wasn't me, idiot. I don't know.
But, hey, it's very viable guy to do that. But so Jared ends up taking the first fall, or taps to take the first fall. So Kurt's up 1-0. So the next fall is pinfall. And, you know, just a generic match, just Jeff gets busted in it. And did you think that this match needed one or both of them to get juice to make it that much better?
I didn't think Kurt needed color.
Okay.
Nah. Jeff's the heel.
Yeah.
That's what makes people happy. They're like, yeah, this fucker's bleeding. Yeah, kill him. Kill him right now.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the way they did it was great. I can't think of any other thing better to say.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So two other things I want to talk with Kurt here is, one, he took a nasty bump off the top there during this.
Yeah, he was actually... he's done it before, obviously.
Sure.
He was really nervous about it all day. He was really trying to mark the spot for him to, you know, be safe, not too close, because he didn't want to, you know, hit the turnbuckles on the way down. The way that the TNA cage was set up is it comes a little off, a little further than WWE's, because there's usually it's really, really tight. So it's because there's a post that the cage mounts on.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit further to jump than say WWE, if anybody can relate to what I'm saying. But anyway, still, it doesn't matter. But to do a backflip off of something that high, 10 to 12 feet down, 5 feet of ring, that's a long ways down.
You were talking about his, with the, I believe the spot that he had to hit in the ring when he was doing the moonsault off the top, right?
Yeah. So basically what it was because the cage is built a little differently than it is WWE, it's got more of an angle where there's it's further out. So basically where he wanted to do was measure where his body was going to land. And that was where we were struggling, because obviously you're not going to do that twice in a day. So what he did was he just tried to measure the body. And that was something that he was really nervous about all day. And if you watch that match, he kind of overshot him just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Still a hell of a bump. It's still something that, you know, people should want to watch and see. But, yeah, he overshot him a little bit. Both guys had to sell a little bit more than what probably was there. But it was something that he, you know, was actually nervous about throughout the day.
Yeah. So, also, I want to get your thoughts. You know, you take a pretty good bump here during this match, too. Taking a punch from Kurt Angle, man. How did you ever thought that it would come to that between the two of you?
Well, no, but I love it. Feels good.
Yeah.
No, but it was good. No, actually, but if that was actually a clothesline, he gave me a clothesline.
Was it a clothesline? Okay. For whatever.
Yeah. Because
okay.
Remember he was sprayed with the stuff that Karen gave him.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I couldn't remember if it was a clothesline or a punch. Yeah. Yeah. That yeah, guy. So,
that's okay. No, I've been punched by him too, but it all works. But no, so basically when I went to grab him, he thought I was Jeff. And so he went to, you know, to clothesline me. Mm-hmm. So he clotheslined me, took my head off, and that's what led to the finish.
Okay. Yeah. So Jeff goes over, like I said, 4-star match from Meltzer. hell of a match. This was in April. They had the match in against all odds in the 11 Genesis 11 Slammiversary Sacrifice. Dude, they had so many good matches in 2011. Was this the feud of 2011?
It was, yes, because of the backstory.
In general, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who had a wife, and his wife leaves him for another guy who's still in the business in the actual same company, and they come together, and it's historic. I mean, it really is. I mean, this was Karen Angle for such a long time, and then becomes Karen Jarrett, which is, you know, pretty intriguing for a lot of people that are, you know, following what the story goes and where it goes. So, yeah, I would say that 2011 was the peak of the story.
Yeah, no doubt. So, at all, do you agree with the 4-star rating from Meltzer, or do you think it, you know, was one of the better matches of their group of matches? Do you think this was their best one?
I think if Meltzer said 4 stars, you probably should give it 5.
Well, of course.
But no. I thought he cheated him some, honestly. I mean, that should be 4.5. I'm not saying it should be 5. It should be 4.5.
Yeah.
Give him 4 is fair, especially for Meltzer. So, I think everybody will take it.
Yeah. So let's go up to the ring right now to our buddy Rich Palladino and get some listener questions in here.
It's listener questions.
All right, Brian. So we got a few listener questions here, a couple new ones, a couple from returning ones. Let's start with our buddy 48 Guitars there on Twitter. He asks if there is any hear any more stories of your in-ring interactions with wrestlers during matches like this.
Say the question again.
He said he'd love to hear more stories of your in-ring interactions with wrestlers during matches, if at all possible, during in this type of match. Did you have any other interactions with any other wrestlers in cage matches or whatnot?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, there's always communication going on because there's always, you know, time restraints. There's always things where somebody may have gotten hurt and says, hey, give me a minute or two. There's always moments where the guy says, hey, I want to change something. Tell him to shoot me to the corner and duck, and I'll pick it up from there. Or maybe tell him to shoot duck and I'll grab a hold. I mean, So there's always communication going on, especially in that particular type of match where, you know, there's so much, you know, at stake and so much on the line where it's a major pay-per-view draw. So yeah, there's a lot of things that a referee would have to do to basically communicate between the two guys without them communicating together.
Sure. Yeah. And then that kind of branches off what Brian Haremza wants to know too, is how do you referee differently in a cage match than you would opposed to, say, a regular standard one-on-one match? Or what do you have to do differently, I should say?
Well, there's nothing differently really I do. It is a little more intimidating, I'll be honest with you. When you come down the rampway and you get into a cage and there's nothing around you but steel, it's a little intimidating. And then when you walk in there and do that with somebody like Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, with what we know, what we all know, it can be a little nerving, but because there's no way to get out of there. You know what I mean? So unless I climb the cage and go to the back, but that's not going to happen. So, yeah.
Come on. You know you could do it.
I mean, I could. I mean, I would just probably, I don't know. I'd just bite the lock or something. I don't know.
All right, so Brad Stanton is up next. He has a question about Jeff Jarrett personally. So he says, Jeff Jarrett has repeatedly said that he was happy to lose to China back in the WWF. Back then, I would imagine he would be in the minority, Brad says. He says, was he ahead of his time with his thinking, or was it that China was an exception to the rule?
I mean, you got to say China was an exception to the rule. I mean, obviously, 9th wonder of the world, really put wrestling for women on the map. I mean, that's when people started to respect women and start respecting that they could do just what a man could do in the ring. So the thing is, I mean, for him to be able to do a job for a woman, whether he wanted to or not, I don't know that answer. I've never talked to Jeff about it, but you know what? If I was in Jeff's shoes, it'd be a job that I would put over to her for sure. I mean, what better person than China? I mean, she was the leader, the example of what women wanted to be and what women wanted to say and do. She was that. She didn't look like just your ordinary woman either. So that didn't hurt the situation either. I mean, she was a full grown woman. I mean, sure. she just put it, the way you want. I mean, just built. Mm-hmm. So this was ahead of its time for sure.
Yeah. All right. So our last question comes from Amy. Yes, we have another lady or woman listener, Brian. So we're happy to have her.
I like those women.
Gotta love her.
Yeah, you gotta have them in there.
Yeah. So it's kind of along the lines like we talked about Jeff being a third generation performer and booker. This kind of goes along the same lines as you with your dad too. Is she wants to know if you always wanted to be a referee, or did you ever aspire to do something else? Obviously, coming from a refereeing family, what made it easier because of it, and what made it harder?
Well, I've never. Sure. Well, I've never not wanted to do anything but be in wrestling for my whole life, basically. I wanted to be a wrestler at some point and realized that was not going to happen. As you can tell, I'm not growing any bigger. So that was an option that wasn't there. So of course I went on the lineage of what my uncle and my father have done and decided to take that part of that business up. Mm-hmm. The pressure of that was of course filling, the shoes of the two of the greatest referees that ever reffed in the business. So that was the pressure that was put on me there. But otherwise, wrestling's always been something I wanted to always do. Refereeing was my B option, to be honest with you, because I always wanted to be a wrestler. I wanted to come out there and get that pop or get that boo, but realized that was never going to happen. So refereeing was something that I settled in, and I'm glad I did. But yeah, the pressures are always there, especially when you're trying to follow up a third generation, So I feel like, I followed through and did, make them proud. And so that's basically it.
Yeah. Well, you did get that pop when you did that beatboxing thing with Kurt Angle and John Cena. You got that pretty good pop there on SmackDown. So you got that pop for one way or another.
Yeah, exactly, man. I got that pop one way or another.
All right, man. So before we close shop for tonight, you got anything you want to promote going forward outside of, outside the show with Impact coming up?
No, we have a big pay-per-view coming up on the 23rd, 24th. Was that right?
23rd, 24th. Yep.
Yes, sir. So we got a big pay-per-view, and then we have TV tapings following in Poughkeepsie, New York. My good buddy RJ will be there, which I'm very excited about, him and his son. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to treat them and hang out and let's just go over the land, and that'd be awesome.
Amen to that, my friend. So you can find us on the Twitter gimmick at Roughing It Up or at Baby Hebner, or you could just simply go over to castbuy.com/roughingitup, and all the links are there for all our platforms we're on. All our socials are there as well. Next week, Brian, we're hitting it hard this time. And it's not just because of the topic. We're talking everything beer money next week. James Storm and Bobby Roode, one of the best tag teams of all time, in my opinion, in TNA. We're going to be going over them as well as going over their match against the Motor City Machine Guns from 2011 Genesis. What's something that we can look forward to with this, Brian?
I think that you're going to be able to be enlightened by some of the better tag matches I've ever reffed in my life. Can't wait to go over this and talk about this and talk about the great two guys such as Bobby Roode and James Storm, two of the finest men that I've ever worked with and been around in this sport as well. It's going to be great. And you're talking about two opposites that attract. Well, we'll talk about that. It's going to be interesting.
yeah, definitely looking forward to this. One of my favorite tag teams of all time in TNA there with Beer Money. So definitely look forward to that and looking forward to what we got going forward with that too as well, Brian. So another great show, man. Can't wait to see what's coming up next.
Yes, sir. I appreciate everything, man. Once again, follow us at Reffing It Up. You can do that on Twitter. You can do that on Instagram. You can also follow me at Baby Hebner on Instagram and Twitter. So I'll make that pretty easy for you.
Awesome. So until next time, you're listening to Reffing Up. Thank you so much for tuning in this week and next week as well going forward. So thanks, guys.
1, 2, 3.